morning, Dan.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Adams.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Sten.
Here.
Potter.
Before we begin the agenda, we have some special guests in the chamber today, and I'd like to talk a little bit about them and ask them at the end of that to stand. Like other major employers, the City of Portland is going to be hit hard by impending retirements, baby boomers departing the workforce. And as part of our succession planning efforts, the City of Portland's Office of Management and Finance is hosting a job shadow day for 14 graduate students from all over the country who are attending PSU's Hatfield School of Government summer programs, OMF professionals from the fields of financial analysis, management analysis, program management, and project management have volunteered to serve as mentors for the job shadow day. Each student will have the opportunity to spend time with at least two professionals, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. The students have participated in one of five week-long academic programs this summer with the Oregon Performance Institute, e-government, public sector financial management, sustainability, or Generation Next, which is a program to encourage diversity in the public sector, leadership. The students are also completing a 10-week internship at public agencies throughout the Portland area. Would you please rise if you're a mentor or an intern? Welcome. We're glad you're here. All righty. We're starting with request for communications, item 890.
Request of Melissa Hagen to address council regarding the Love Rally on September 29th.
Melissa Hagen, are you here? All right, let's go to 891.
Request of John Ryan to address council regarding assistance from the City Council.
Good morning, Mr. Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir.
Welcome to City Council, and you have 3 minutes. Please state
your
name.
My name's John Ryan. There should be a letter in front of you. I just wanted to present that, and if you could take just a few minutes to read that, could save a great deal of work, and also the very last part concerns Vision PDX. But thank you very much for your time and cooperation.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. All right, Carla, can you please read the time certain at 9:30, item 892?
Did you want to dispose of the consent agenda first?
Yeah, thank you. All right, we have the consent agenda before us. Is there any member of the City Council that would like to pull an item from the consent agenda?
Did we skip Melissa Hagen for a reason?
She was not here.
She was not here. Okay.
We called her and she didn't come. Okay. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to pull any item from the consent agenda? If not, Carla, would you please call the roll on the consent agenda?
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
All right, that does now get us to the time certain, item 892.
Authorized subrecipient contract with the Portland Schools Foundation for $950,000 to administer the Community Grants Fund to support the Citywide Schools Families Housing Initiative and provide for payment.
Sure. And Mr. President, it would probably make sense just to read 893 and 894, and we'll present them as a package.
893, authorize an intergovernmental agreement for $450,000 with Multnomah County and the Housing Authority of Portland for services and programs to support the Citywide Schools Families Housing Initiative and provide for payment. 894, authorize subrecipient contract with the Portland Housing Center for $200,000 to create a 10% cash reserve sales of its loan portfolio over the next two fiscal years to support the Citywide Schools Family Housing Initiative and provide for payment.
Commissioner Sten.
Great. Thanks, Mr. President. This is actually a presentation I've been looking forward to having in front of you, and it's kind of a formal kickoff on an initiative that the council has been working with my office and Daniela at Bureau of Housing Community Development and partners throughout the community for about a year and a half now, and this is the School Family Housing Initiative. And for those of you who are not familiar, the council has begun a strategy to try and link our housing efforts, our community development efforts, and our planning and parks efforts better to the needs of local neighborhood schools. And some of this began with a realization in I think early part of 05 when we were taking another look at how do we fund schools. We at that point, and thankfully we're not there now, but we were at another school funding crisis. And it became clear that one of the things that's causing problems in schools throughout Portland, and not just Portland Public Schools, but David Douglas and Park Rose and all the districts that are either entirely in the city of Portland, which I think many people don't realize David Douglas and Park Rose are, is what I now better, I think, describing as a balance of students. In about 10 years ago, there were 55,000 students at Portland Public Schools, Portland Public School District. And now there are 44,000. And if you look at the funding problems that our biggest district is facing, they would not be alleviated, but would be much, much better if they had back those 10,000 students. Meanwhile, David Douglas, to use a key example, is literally coming apart at the seams. They have so many kids that they don't have enough facilities. And the tax base is so different in those two parts of the city that David Douglas finds it almost not necessarily impossible, but very difficult. And they failed last year to pass a bond measure. And I don't think it's because their citizens don't care about the schools. It's because there's no downtown, there's no industrial base. And so when you start applying the kind of tax rates that you need to build a new school in that smaller part of town, you get to a number that people literally just can't afford. And so the point of the School Family Housing Initiative is to try and see what the city can do to take both resources we're going to spend anyway on housing and better tie it to school policy. And so, for example, out in David Douglas, we recently built some affordable family housing that was much needed, but may have built it close to a school that was overwhelmed rather than close to a school that had extra space. I think we can do a lot better job of tying our homeownership programs. Danielle is leading Operation Home, which is an effort to help minority families buy homes. We know that minority families in Portland have about a 20% lower homeownership rate than white families. If we can target those efforts that we're going to do anyway next to high-performing schools that have openings, we can actually help solve a bunch of problems at once as well as stabilize kids. So part of this effort, and you'll hear about this today, is getting planning, parks, and other folks who are already doing things, and they've really stepped up, thanks to each of the commissioners and the bureau directors and key staff, to better align the efforts they're already doing to help schools and tie them into it. And then what we've also got, and this is what these contracts are, a couple of pilot projects where we want to test some ideas and see what works. A big one, and I think we're going to have a chance to meet the new director of the Schools Foundation today, so welcome to Portland. It's going to be very nice to introduce you in this fashion by contracting a bunch of money that we want you to work with. It's usually the welcome I find people like the most. But we've got, the council has authorized $950,000 that we are going to RFP out to the greater community with a lot of flexibility and a lot of creativity and say, can you design grants that can help support your local schools? And Rich Rogers from my office, who's coordinating this effort, will give you some more info about that. But I think it's a very exciting idea, and we want to see what happens. We've also got a rent assistance pilot where, again, different problems in different parts of town, but there are quite a few schools, particularly in the lower income neighborhoods, where what we're seeing, say, at Lent Elementary is in the range of a 30-35% turnover in students between September and May. And so the idea is to take some rent assistance money, we do rent assistance programs anyway, target it very carefully and see if by working with the parents and the counselors in schools, we could maybe slow down the turnover rate and help stabilize those schools. And a homeownership program that's going to be, again, one of our typical strategies, but now much more tied toward assisting parents. And so we hope this all comes together. You also hear today about Planning Bureau direct strategy led by the Planning Bureau to take a look at three key areas of town, David Douglas, Cully, and Hillsdale, and sort of see what some neighborhood planning would do to also support the school. So I'm going to turn it over to Rich Rogers, who's the coordinator of this effort, and we'll walk you through. We've got, like I said, some special guests and partners to talk with, and hopefully we can do this in an interactive fashion, just jump in and ask questions.
Thanks, Commissioner, for the introduction. For the record, Rich Rogers from the Office of Commissioner Sten. I'm the coordinator for the Council Schools Family Housing Initiative. We're going to move through this fairly quickly today. We have a brief PowerPoint. I think Commissioner Sten has covered the points pretty well. And then we'll introduce you to our contracting partners from the Schools Foundation, the county, and the Portland Housing Center. We have two central goals under this initiative. The first, as the commissioner mentioned, is to direct our city resources in a coordinated and cost-effective way to help balance what's happening with school enrollment. And a lot of that's tied to housing. Secondly, we want to use our capacity, which is meaningful, to for good public involvement and decision-making to help develop vibrant, multifunctional neighborhood schools that, that meet the needs of students. We are employing a number of strategies. Three of them are the contracts before you today: rent assistance to families in schools with high turnover, home ownership for first-time home buyers, the grants program under the Schools Foundation, and then a number of other strategies that, that I'd like to talk about in a little bit more detail. The neighborhood engagement planning work is really, I think, one of the more exciting aspects of this project. The Bureau of Planning has identified three areas in different parts of the city where we want to convene a community conversation to talk about what families need to you know, have a good, stable community and stable, attractive schools. In East Portland, we're responding to a request from House Speaker Jeff Merkley and Commissioner Leonard's office to really dig in on some of the longstanding problems in East Portland. Among those are overcrowded school facilities, rapid rate of infill, and insufficient family infrastructure, for lack of a better phrase, safe streets, parks, and those types of things. We want to do it in a coordinated way. The model we propose to use is the Rosa Parks model out of New Columbia, where the school district and the housing authority and the city did a terrific job of building multifunctional community spaces into the school so that when the school closes in the evening, they bring a door down and it opens up as a community recreational space. And there's a lot of warmth and excitement in the school, and we think that that principle of multifunctional community spaces can be well applied to other schools around town, whether they be new schools or remodels. We're also, I'll give you a little bit of an update today on a proposal that's underway to look at the build-out of the River District in a more comprehensive fashion. Right now, our bonus structure for FAR and height in the central city is a little bit loose and unfocused, and we think that by better tying the height and bonus structures to what it will take to get families into the River District and into the Pearl, we can you know, make some progress on that longstanding identified need to have more families down there. And part of doing that, we think, will be going after a new K-8 public school. And I should we can go on to the next piece. The School Stabilization Fund is a partnership with the county. We've identified seven schools working with the county and our school districts where we have high student mobility. That is, you know, in a given year, a large number of students either are new arrivals or leave, and we think a lot of that's tied to housing. We're basing this model on some success we had with our homeless populations, temporarily homeless, where with a month or two worth of assistance, we were able to get them back on their feet. The principle here is that by spending a couple thousand dollars to help a family, we can not only stabilize that family and that child in that classroom, we can also help stabilize the district's finances based on the money they get from the state. The homeownership piece is a partnership with the Portland Housing Center. Again, we're looking to more cost-effectively use the resources that the city puts into homeownership. We have a model that we can describe in some detail, if you like, that calls for a minimal city investment and a 10% cash reserve. This first phase, we think we'll be able to do about 40 first-time homebuyer deals at a cost of about $5,000 per deal. And that translates well into financial health for the schools and getting those families into their first-time homes. The third piece is a community grants partnership with the Schools Foundation. The Schools Foundation has done terrific work in Portland Public Schools to help get the community involved in helping our schools and help identifying small amount of investments that can go out into PTAs and school communities to get families the resources they need to make their schools stable and attractive. We want to build on that, make it citywide, and really tap into the wealth of creativity that's out in our community on these issues. The third piece, we talked a little bit about East Portland. I'll also talk about the other elements of the partnership with planning on neighborhood engagement and partnerships around schools. And Cully and Concordia, they're experiencing a rapid rate of infill, much like our neighborhoods east of 82nd. And similarly, it's another neighborhood that was annexed into the city over the last couple of decades. There's some gaps and some deficiencies in the infrastructure. There's also the Whitaker School there. It's about a 10-acre site. It's been demolished recently. And there are a lot of different ideas about what could happen at that Whitaker site. The school board has talked about potentially a new school with some housing. There's a proposal from Concordia University to put some recreational facilities on that same land. There are also other large parcels in the neighborhood that are likely to redevelop in the coming years. What we want to do is work with planning to convene a conversation with the community and all our city bureaus and our school district to help advise the Portland Public Schools Board on some scenarios for Whitaker as well as some other sites. It's not difficult to foresee that all of the ideas that people have for Whitaker won't be possible to fit on that site. But we think by looking at a broader spectrum of land and the broader spectrum of needs in the community, we can help make sure that all the pieces sort out effectively. The third neighborhood partnership effort is in Hillsdale. As part of the recent round of proposed school closures, Riki was identified as a school that had insufficient enrollment to meet the new operating model at Portland Public Schools. It's just too small. It's a popular school, but the physical footprint of the school is too small to fit the 400 to 600 kids. So Superintendent Phillips challenged the Riki community to come up with a plan to boost their enrollment, and it was an amazing effort. They have a wealth of volunteer resources at their disposal. They put together about 100-page plan that's about as thorough a document as we'll see, and we think can serve as a model for how communities can come up with effective plans for their neighborhood schools. In conjunction, the Hillsdale Neighborhood Association, the Business Association, came up with some exciting visions for the Hillsdale Town Center, which is located right in the heart of the Riki Wilson campus. So what we want to do is convene that conversation and say, how can we coordinate the city's resources and make this vision happen to the best of our ability? Part of our work citywide is the partnership with Safe Routes to Schools. It's a terrific program. We're expanding it to a few more schools to make sure that kids can get to school safely. We talked about the Rosa Parks model. We'll go through that. Talked a bit about the River District. And I want to talk about how all this flows into the timeline for bond measures with our school districts. As you know, each district board makes an independent decision to go out to the voters for the facilities needs that they have. And what we'd like to do is bring city resources to the table to make sure that we're helping them be successful to the extent that's possible. The Portland Public School Board is conducting a comprehensive facilities analysis that will wrap up in the November to February timeline. The work that we're doing with our neighborhood partnerships and planning, we want to feed into that timeline in as effective way as possible so that we're making a constructive contribution. Likewise, we want to coordinate with our East Portland districts, David Douglas, Reynolds, Centennial, and Park Rose. A couple other pieces that are part of this work. There's a family housing design competition for planning that you've heard about. That's just getting out underway, and they sent out a press release yesterday. And finally, we're working with the school district and Auditor Blackmer on an effort to better market Portland schools and neighborhoods to families who are moving to the region for the first time. We've been working with One Economy. They have a test case or a case study for the design of a website that will do that, and we'll continue to develop that partnership with the Bureau of Technology Services. So I'll stop there, take any questions you have right now, or I can introduce our partners.
I do have just kind of an observation, and I know you guys have worked really hard on this, and there's hardly anything that's come my way that I've thought was such a great idea in terms of creating housing and actually doing something substantive to turn around the demographics that will bring kids in to repopulate Portland Public Schools. This is a great program. But it does occur to me that that sometimes the success of these programs, and I have no doubt you're laying the groundwork to be highly successful, leads to other issues later on. And I'm just going to throw this out because I'm sure in the 60s, when Portland leaders were looking at inner northeast Portland, Irvington, that was not, by the way, the Irvington that people see today. It was crime-ridden. Families were moving out in droves, in many cases turning houses over for the taxes owed. houses now that sell for $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, and was not a desirable place to live. And through the Model Cities program and other efforts, we have been so successful to turn that around that now you go to a neighborhood meeting in that area and people say, what are you going to do about the gentrification of Irvington? And so for those of us who have seen both sides, it's an interesting conundrum to have, that you've been so successful that the original group of families that lived there can no longer afford to live there. So I'm just wondering, has that been something you've anticipated or thought about 10 years out, 20 years out, that we could, you could actually be so successful in what you're doing that you create a situation where a lot of the families that used to live in Irvington now live in Coley and Lentz and east parts of East Portland, then we'll not be able to afford to live in those neighborhoods?
Our intent, well, I'll back up and say yes. We've tried to think about the longer-term picture. And our goal is to balance enrollment, to make sure it's not too low in parts of the city, not too high in others. And to me, that doesn't necessarily mean that we come in and we gentrify East Portland, you know, east of 82nd or Cully. It means that we pay attention to the overall mix, along with the sort of 5 to 10 year window for a school facility in a given neighborhood. And I think what hasn't happened in the past is we haven't been able to have that partnership between the city and the school district, right, to say what do we see coming down the pike with market redevelopment, city involved projects, as well as your enrollment trends and your capacity and your facilities. If we can do that successfully, I think we can try to avoid unintended consequences.
I mean, there's not much we can do about the value of a house. I mean, if it's worth X amount today and we do all of this work, I'm just wondering, has anybody come up, because I have not, with a strategy or a solution when you're recreating essentially a demographic area the way that this will do it, and I'm convinced it will. Is there anything you build in or can think about doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, the key piece of thinking that's not, it seems very obvious, but we haven't acted on it, is that a lot of the demographic changes, the cause of many of the demographic changes at the schools is housing, and the unaffordability of it, the desirability of it in other neighborhoods. And so I think it's the home ownership piece, which is a multi-year struggle, but getting people who are on the bubble, not just minority families, but the disparity with minority families is startling, a chance to own, and if they do own, they have a chance to stay. For those folks who cannot own, getting affordable rentals, both preserved. I think one of the things that it's not talked about a lot, but the nonprofits in the 90s preserved over 1,000 units in Inner Northeast. And if you think the gentrification is bad now, take those 1,000 units out of the 10,000 units that are there.
So this would be like that.
Yeah, and so we have to go out and preserve and be much more aggressive. And then the third is spending more money to buy and develop sites in more expensive areas. And so one of the things we're honed in on very, very hard, I mean, there is, thankfully, a finite number of people who can't afford housing in Portland, and I think we should actually be talking about building enough housing for everybody, not a token amount. And one of the reasons I'm personally focused on very, very hard right now is before we finish the River District, we could get 400 affordable family units in there. There's already 1,000 affordable units in the River District, which people don't know, but they're all small. If we could get 400 in there, at the moment, it's an expensive thing to do, but when you look out 20 years from now, that's a place that then will have income diversity for good. And so it's those kind of strategies. The Hillsdale strategy involves much more. One of the opportunities up there is there's an old defense base that's closing. We might be able to do affordable family housing. So getting affordable family housing into the less income diverse areas is also the other piece of it, so that people aren't concentrating in one place. So
I appreciate that.
But it's housing. It's housing investment, I think, is the only answer, because if people don't have a place to live, they get pushed out.
Right. I appreciate that response. That's great.
And I would add to your good list, and you and I are working on this, and that is access to transit. When you have families spending more on transportation than they are on food right now, and when the working poor are spending more on transportation than food and in some cases housing, depending on the parts of the United States. So access to transit is important, and then our work, Lynn Knox is sitting on the WIB board, our work at workforce investment, getting people skills up is a way to also increase their household prosperity. So I think I would add to your good list those two items as well.
Well, if it's okay with you, I'll introduce you to our contracting partners. For starters, I'd like to welcome and introduce to the council Connie Van Brunt, the new executive director of the Portland Schools Foundation, and Tripp Somerville is here as well. Lorenzo Poe is here from Chair Wheeler's office to talk about our partnership with the county. And we have Itzel Spahair from the Portland Housing Center to talk about our home ownership effort.
Welcome back, gentlemen, and welcome to Portland. It's a great pleasure to meet you a little too formally, but welcome.
Thank you very much.
Shall I go first?
Yeah, why don't you?
Well, thank you, first of all, for such a wonderful welcome to the city of Portland. As you know, I'm the new executive director of the Portland Schools Foundation, and as you said, what could be more wonderful news than to become a partner with the city of Portland in such a wonderful grant program as a first step. Thank you so much. The Portland Schools Foundation is delighted to partner with the city of Portland in this community grants program. The Schools Family Housing Initiative it's more than an important opportunity. It's the critical direction, a critical opportunity to have a comprehensive strategy that nurtures, attracts, and retains diverse families in our city. What a wonderful, wonderful approach. This is core to the mission of the Schools Foundation, assuredly. And it is assuredly a symbol of Portland's very insightful path and future, and hopeful future. To lead this initiative, I'm really happy to introduce someone that you know already, but our Senior Director of Policy Initiatives, Tripp Somerville.
Thank you. I just want to echo the excitement that we've got with this partnership. We really do believe that this is core to the city's future, how we attract and nurture and sustain families in this city so that we can be one with the right kind, with the breadth of diversity and the breadth of income that makes this city so special. I just want to be very brief and talk a little bit about the three things that we're trying to accomplish with this grant program in partnership with the city, and builds on what you just heard from Rich. But number one is to really increase the vital partnerships among families, schools, and community organizations in a way that we have not been able to in the past, and that can take a variety of forms, from increasing family and parents' involvement in the schools to better linking school and neighborhood planning. The second two are really about this issue that Commissioner Sten raised, which is how you balance enrollment in this city where you've got very different realities and very different parts of the city and very different things going on in each of the schools. And so we want to see how we can use this grants program to really catalyze creative efforts to increase the enrollment of neighborhood kids in the schools in their neighborhoods. And part of that, I think, is trying to figure out how we could promote new ways, new educational opportunities, new learning opportunities that are really going to keep families and young people engaged in schools and education in ways that may be outside of the classroom. And the second thing is to deal with really the pipeline of enrollment that we have. We want to figure out ways that we can market these schools to new families who may be on the verge of having children or have young kids and they're thinking about kindergartens, but also not lose sight of the fact that we lose hundreds of middle school and high school kids in this city every year because they're disconnected, they drop out, they have other options, and every time a kid leaves a school, check goes with it. So there is a way to talk about sustaining those families that we've got in the schools and keep them in the schools. We are going to start a design process to create this grants program. Going to be able to launch that in the coming weeks and doing it in a way that really does elicit the best ideas this community has to offer. Expect to issue an RFP for proposals in September and have money on the street in mid to late fall so we can really get down to find out what's working in different parts of the city to accomplish these goals. And we, as an institution, will be reporting back to you regularly about the progress we're making and also the lessons we're learning. So we're very quite excited and looking forward to this together.
Thank you.
So do you want to wait till we're
called? No, why don't we take questions?
So I'm curious. So there have been discussions in the community, in various parts of the community in the past, that the school district hasn't always embraced working with those that want to create affordable housing on surplus property. Is that something you recognize as an issue? And if so, are you changing your view about that or doing something that's going to be maybe a little more aggressive about thinking along the lines of what we're discussing here for your surplus properties?
So we're not the school district. We work in partnership with the school district. I do know that the senior leadership team at PPS has actually become much more forceful and creative and aggressive about building different and new partnerships with community organizations, particularly around the surplus land and surplus building question. The opportunity that I think that we have as a partner in this is a way to begin to broker and bring those parties together, perhaps in a way that they haven't been able to in the past.
That's kind of what I was asking. Is
trying
that
to find
on your
some
radar,
ground.
And that's something you're working on? Okay,
right.
Good.
I guess the $950,000, is that right? Or is less than that actually available for grants?
We'll have about $850,000 available for direct grants to organizations throughout the city.
So what kind of parameters are there around those grants? Are they multi-year? Is there minimum amounts, maximum amounts?
Commissioner Saltzman, that's part of the design process. I think we have some initial thoughts about this because it is a small amount of money. You want to be able to have an impact. You want it to be catalytic, and you don't want it to have to build an ongoing need for funding. So within those parameters is how we begin the conversation. I think one of the things we are going to be very deliberate about is reaching out to the wise people in this community to understand what's the best way to do this and what's the best way to structure it so that the money can be catalytic and flexible and it can spark innovation. And we'll be able to come back to you in 60 days, 30 to 60 days, with specific guidelines about how, once we've done that outreach and done that analysis, to come back and
say
this is what
we're doing. I think we'd probably bring those back and show them to the council before we go out. I mean, I don't want to prejudge this. My instinct is, you know, obviously they're one-time grants. Obviously they will want to have some sense of being able to check. I mean, we want to create excitement. So it's
right.
Not going to be just, can you prove you got more kids there? But some sense of, can we see, you know, as you get to the next school year, did this have an impact? Do we have, I mean, David Douglas is a different matter, and grants will be available in David Douglas as well. In PPS, the drop in enrollment is 10 kids per school per year for 10 years. So that's kind of the idea is, you know, can you in a key school get 10 more kids regularly and start pushing forward? I lean towards more grants at a little smaller dollar amount than a couple of big grants, you know, because I think the idea is to get some excitement going in many parts of the city. But these are all things that will depend on coming back to us and then also on who applies. I'm scheduled to go see the steering committee that the mayor has of Vision PDX, and I think there's 54 affiliates of Vision PDX, if I've got the number right, and I think this would be the perfect thing to take to them and say, I mean, I think this fits the vision. Why don't you go out and see how this ties into all that energy that's out there? So it's all those kind of things. How do you – this is clearly a spark plug kind of amount of money, even though it's a significant grant program. Mr. Poe.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. Lorenzo Poe, Senior Policy Advisor to Multnomah County Chair Ted Wheeler. And I am delighted to be here today for Multnomah County to talk about and support the partnership with the city for the schools and family housing project. We in Multnomah County anticipate with the funding and available that we'll be able to serve 80 families and 7 different school sites. Looking at diverse outcomes that we know will support children and families as we want them to stay and grow and increase their academic pursuits. We believe that the outcomes we will see is stabilizing families through housing assistance. We understand both from the city and the county side what happens to young children who are in unstable housing. The inability to focus and concentrate on their academic pursuit is always present. So where you're able to stabilize that and support children, we would see academic gains. Also, the other critical outcome is to reduce student mobility. Studies after studies clearly demonstrate when students move or are forced to move because of their family's inability to maintain housing, what they lose from transition to one school to another severely impacts them and often leads to, in the long term, of a student dropping out. We want to increase student success. Where we can stabilize them and support them, we find that we're able to, in fact, show higher outcomes for student achievement, which is a critical point to helping students stay in school and move forward. We also want to increase family success. We understand that you have to support families and increase their success to increase student success. Utilizing and leveraging not just these resources, but other resources of the county for families who may find themselves in need of substance abuse treatment, mental health services, access to health services. The county has a system by which our case managers will be able to refer these families to that system to help support the whole family. You want to look at this in the context of really maintaining and supporting whole families as you help children. We know that we all are very interested in fundamental success for kids and families and making sure that we're stabilizing communities and leveraging all our existing resources in our delivery systems to make sure that your funding, in this case particularly, goes directly to the family. We're going to utilize our current system to be the case management structure for the system so that rent assistance and other dollars go directly to the families. Therefore, we're maximizing and leveraging the combination of our partnership and utilizing what we finally talk about as our joint SUN model system of services, which you are a primary partner in looking at how we stabilize and support families, particularly those families that are at the higher need of our continuum, and making sure that we find a way to leverage those resources that students and families stay in school, engage in schools, particularly as you start to find a housing market that they're forcing families to leave, in this case, particularly Portland Public Schools, where we can assist and stabilize in other services. We surely believe we can help maintain families there. We will also use existing structures such as the short-term rental assistance systems that are ran by the Housing Authority of Portland. They will manage the funds and the landlord's payments. Our case managers will, in fact, do the case management, work through HAP to ensure that the landlord gets payment where the issue is rent assistance and eviction is imminent in order to help stabilize and support this. This is all very inclusive and in line with the vision that we have adopted as a county and city around the SUN system, which is a very inclusive system that is very inclusive in terms of our access, very inclusive in the array of effective services we want to provide our community, and a very collaborative approach, and that is an integrated approach across multiple jurisdictions and agencies. We are finding as jurisdictions and agencies that none of us have the resources or the wherewithal to do this alone. We share common families and children and missions, and where we can maximize our efforts and resources to, in fact, ensure that we get good outcomes, it makes good sense. This is another example of the kind of collaborative partnerships that we're bringing to the table. Again, we at the county are extremely excited about this. We will build upon the model which our Touchstone workers currently provide access to array of services for families and schools, utilizing rent assistance as one of the tools, but also supporting those families and making sure that the children and families are supported as they move through the system. And again, we're very excited about this. We look forward to our further collaboration, not just with our partners at the city, but with the foundations and others as we look to stabilize and see increased outcomes for our kids and our school system. Thank you.
Thanks, Lorenzo. Questions? And the Housing Center. Let me trade with somebody so you can get a mic.
Good morning. My name is Itzel Spihar, and I work for the Portland Housing Center as a community home ownership trainer. The Portland Housing Center is very excited to partner with the city to promote home ownership opportunities for families with children in the area. As home prices rise, our financial services become essential for families who want to purchase a home in Portland. The Portland Housing Center has been providing financial services, counseling, and education for 16 years. And this year, we are very proud to announce that we assisted 422 families buy houses. 153 were people of color. The Portland Housing Center provides below market second mortgage loans to homeowners through revolving loan pool. The city funding in the form of a loan sale guarantee, which ensures that we can attract more capital to the pool and that the fund revolves annually through a loan sale. Through this partnership, the Portland Housing Center will meet the following outcomes. Number one, provide increased financial assistance to Portland Housing Center home buyers with children in Portland schools. Number two, increase capital and loan volume of the revolving loan pool. Number three, increase private resources for use as loan pool capital. Number four, increase City of Portland leverage funding to support the school's families' housing. I am a former employer of the Beaverton School District. I work as a teacher and as a community liaison, and I know of the impact that children have when parents own a house. I am very proud to live in a city that supports home ownership because that creates a stability for a family, and kids do very well when parents are involved in activities in their neighborhoods and become engaged in a community.
Thank you. Yeah, any questions for the Housing Center? Rich.
Well, I just want to close by thanking you for the opportunity to come before you today, and also to thank all of your offices and all of our bureau partners. People have really done terrific creative work getting us where we are today. And, of course, I want to thank our community partners upon whom we depend to make this initiative a success.
Thanks, Rich. If there's no further questions, that would conclude. I guess we'd take public testimony.
How many folks have signed up to testify?
We didn't have anyone sign up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify on this matter? Okay, in regards to item 892, it's a non-emergency, move to a second reading, as well as for 893 and 894.
Well, I just want to, while folks, partners are still in the room, I just want to thank you, Commissioner Sten, for follow through on this and your leadership in getting it done. I think this is a new and creative approach to attracting and keeping families in the city of Portland. And the fact that the partnership is between the organizations and agencies and the involvement of planning is absolutely key. It is, and it seems like, I just highlight the fact that you're looking at schools that are oversubscribed for students and schools that are undersubscribed for students. I think it's just a radically good common sense idea. And so I'm happy to support this and appreciate all the work that's gone into it since the budget process.
And I need to say, echo Commissioner Adams' comments and say, as a person who I actually live in the David Douglas School District, and so I have a great relationship with the superintendents out east in addition to the Portland Public Schools, and this is an issue that resonates with them very much. They are very excited about Commissioner Sten's work on this. And it's pretty nice for a politician to say, well, I can't give you the answer on that, but I know Commissioner Sten is working on that really hard, and I'm supporting his efforts, so I really appreciate this really. We sometimes overuse the word vision, but this truly is a visionary project that I'm very excited to support. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to add my accolades. I'm very excited about this work. I think it's tackling a lot of fronts that we need to make Portland a more family-friendly city and support our schools. I guess the only red flag I'd like to raise at this time is the idea of the River District School. I need to see some sort of certificate of need that the school district really needs a school there. The trends look good, but the last thing we want to do is be building a school that the district can't afford to operate. So I think that's, at some point I'm going to be saying to the school district, show me this is really needed. So I think we need to keep that in mind.
No, and I think we wanted to make sure we mentioned it. It's really part of the Central City Plan and the potentially the planning group that you and I are working on with PDC to look at the future of the River District. So it will need to come back to the council. I just want to make sure we mention it. And the need for the school in the River District is non-existent if we don't build family housing down there. So it really is, it's the bigger decision of the city has probably three full blocks left that we have the ability to program. We don't own them all, but we have the ability to essentially program for affordable housing in what's left of the River District, which at that density is in the range of 400 units. And so if those go into a style of unit with the right kind of parks and amenities to put kids in there, then the need for the school will exist. So it's a joint discussion that has to happen between the city and the school district, because if we work towards getting kids in the school district, there will be a need. If not, there won't be. And so it's something we just need to have. It's a whole big conversation. I completely agree with what you're saying. I'm not arguing with
you.
We
also, like Chapman, I don't know whether it's surplus or deficit in enrollment right now. And things like that. So, you know, at some point, the school district will have to, in my mind, you know, weigh in with a definitive determination. We want the school, and we're prepared to budget it to operate it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's, no, I agree.
And I certainly want to thank you, Commissioner, for your leadership on this. And Rich Rogers and all of our good partners in the community are going to help make this succeed. And I think it does take a community engaged across the board to really make a program like this successful, because the idea is to keep families here, keep our children in Portland, keep our schools strong and vital and healthy. And all that takes a lot of leadership, and I want not only to congratulate you and support you, but do everything I can to make sure it succeeds. So,
thanks, Mayor. I'll just close by saying I appreciate everyone's support. We hope to actually earn it as we do the work. And obviously, this is an initiative of the council that I have got the honor to lead, but the council has been committed to schools. And none of this would be even remotely possible if the school district through all the school districts through tough funding times and now hopefully into some better funding times have done a top-rate job. You know, and we have something to attract people to that does perform. And if you didn't have that, we wouldn't have anything to do. So this really is support of terrific superintendents, teachers, all the way down the line at the schools. So that makes our work easy.
Thank you. We're going to move on to our regular agenda. Thank all you folks for being here today. Carla, please read item 913.
Create a new non-represented classification of Parks and Recreation Central Services and Asset System Manager.
It's a second reading, vote only. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 914.
Yeah.
Authorize a contract with the Police Executive Research Forum for business and technical functionality assessment and documentation of Portland Police data systems.
Staff.
Matt Lamp, Chief Technology Officer and Director of Bureau of Technology Services. With me is Mark Elwood, who's the Information Technology Manager for the Portland Police Bureau. The contract before you is the result of a formal request for proposal process. The RFP had been reviewed by the Portland Police Data System Advisory Group, which includes a number of our partner agencies. As you know, PPDS serves, I think, 19 agencies as their primary data system and another 20 or so who use it for inquiry and sort of data coordination. The evaluation committee included both IT and other Portland Police Bureau staff. And again, also members from people from our partner agencies and an interested citizen. The purpose of the contract is basically the first phase of our work to replace the Portland Police data system as part of the public safety system revitalization project. The sort of project plan and this work is being reviewed regularly by the steering committee, which is the CAO, the chief of police, the fire chief, the POM director, and the 911 director, and then is managed by the project management office for that overall system replacement. There is a project manager assigned for this particular contract, and we'd like to get this work started as soon as we can. Any questions?
Questions from the commissioners?
I have a question just to make sure I'm understanding this. So in order to determine part of what we need to determine for our future needs is to document what we already have, sort of where we're starting from.
Right.
And that's what this contract does?
This contract does sort of multiple steps. One is that documentation. It's also some assessment of the various functionality that's been built into PPDS over a 20-year period as to which of the functionality really is still really being relied on and needs to be carried forward to the future, and which things might have been good ideas 10 years ago, but even though it's there, nobody's really using anymore. We don't really need to worry about it. So we want to document those pieces of the system.
And then you use that to figure out what the
right
next step is, right?
Right. And part of the contract also involves looking at some of the features or in generalized way, the feature sets of what's out there in the commercial market as well. So we have some idea of what we're like if we were to then build an RFP to select a commercial product, what kinds of things we'd likely be leaving on the table or what kind of problems we might face going that direction versus reengineering versus sort of a hybrid open source approach.
So I just want to make sure that in terms of data, and I think the mayor has talked about this before, but that part of what you're looking for is the ability to look at the whole continuum of data to assess performance of our system, to assess requests for services. So right now, I know it's very difficult for us to determine calls for service and be able to link that up to actual responses that then links that up to sort of crime reports and crime data analysis. I just want to make sure that that whole building a better continuum of being able to analyze all the data is part of the thinking here.
Yes, it is. And in fact, we've done some things over the last 6 months that actually helped some of that processing and helped some of the processing for citizens. If you go back 6 months ago, case numbers were generated on PPDS by police records after the fact. So an officer would go out, take a report, but there was no case number for that report at that time. When it came into records and got processed through records, a case number was assigned. So a citizen who might need a case number for an insurance report would have to call back into records a couple days later. Now that we have that case report number being issued at the time of where the officer identifies back to the dispatcher that they will be writing a report, that case number is available for them. It's tagged with all the report information. It's tagged with any evidence or property, and it's streamlining that process considerably. So those kinds of process improvements will be carried forward into the new system design, absolutely.
And the integration between the technology at 911 and this is going to be further cemented?
Yeah. One of the things we found, though, in doing some of the preliminary analysis is that while there is data from 911 that carries over, there's really, when you look at the depth of data in the police data system, the 911 data that comes from dispatch is really a very small percentage of it. You do need to be able to tag it and be able to relate those two together, which we do, we can do, and will definitely be a feature going forward.
How old is the current PPDS mainframe?
Oh, the mainframe itself of the system, the police data system.
The mainframe.
Well, the hardware, I think, is about 7 years old right now.
The technology is decades old.
Yeah, it goes back to the early 1980s.
So it was the same system that when I was there.
Yeah. It's the same
very
system.
Very much so.
It's been a little...
Obviously archaic.
It's been a little bit enhanced in some ways as we've gone, but the core of it is still very, very much the same.
And then my last question is some of the success that other law enforcement and crime prevention efforts around the country have been built on more sort of real-time data available to citizens. So if there's a rash of a particular crime going on in a neighborhood, which isn't always the pattern of crime, but at least getting more real-time data back out helps bolster community policing. Is your scan going to include improving our ability to do that?
Yes. Although I would say today what we do is we do, and I think it's live now. We've now on our second generation of providing citizens access to crime mapping data, and that data is the data set for that is updated pretty much on a daily basis. Every night we do an extract from this old data system into a modern relational database, and that database actually drives the data that feeds Portland Maps and the data that drives the crime analysis, the geographic crime analysis system that we've built for police crime analysis. So we're within a day on data today. We think we can do better than that with the newer system.
It is imaginable that someday a city community policing service could include, I would sign up, I want to know if there's any reported crime in the Kenton neighborhood, and that I wanted to hear about it immediately, and that an email could be generated to my email or PDA that says these are the crimes that reported by day, week, or whatever. That's possible moving forward with this analysis.
Actually, I think you'll find we're getting close to that with the latest thing that will be out. It's either out on Portland Maps or it's still in beta testing right now, where you can identify, basically it'll give you the crime mapping geographically within a range around the address you're interested in.
But you'll send me an email alerting me?
I'll have to check on whether that's part of the feature set or not. But that really would be real time. That really would be real time, because this would be updated as it sits now, updated sort of daily. You'd get sort of the daily update of what it looks like.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor.
And to support that, two of the precincts are testing real-time reporting, which obviously the logjam in the past has been that the reports have been done manually. So by putting them into the computer instantly, they go to records. Records is revising how it enters the information. And so the whole thing is to get closer and closer to that real time, where it's literally within minutes after a police officer takes the report, it's in the system and available for public use.
Right.
Today, I mean, again, one of the changes in the last few months is that records now is taking those paper reports when they get them and scanning them, and we've built a system so and officers can research reports from the essentially the day before, night shift before, and be able to pull those up, get some research on them, including some of the data out of PPDS and some of the data out of the citation system, and then be able to actually pull up the report, as opposed to previously where they would call records and ask for a copy to be sent to them. And their listing of reports would be a day or so late. So we're speeding that process up. With the real-time entry, we'll speed that up further.
Thank you for answering my question.
Further questions? Thanks, folks. Does anybody sign up to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Is anybody here who wishes to testify on this matter? It's a non-emergency and moves to a second reading. Please read item 915.
Create a local improvement district to construct street improvements east of Mallory Avenue in the Northeast Winchell Street Local Improvement District.
It's a second reading, vote only. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, picking up on our last discussion of this, I am supporting this LID, but I want to see the budget for it reduced. Aye.
Stan?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 916.
Authorize price agreements for motor fuels for city vehicles and equipment.
Mr. Leonard?
Have Ty Kovach and Ann Hill come up and explain the details of this. I'll just say from the beginning, although this looks like one of our boring kinds of almost consent calendar items, this is really a unique day in Portland. This is the culmination of about a year or a little more's worth of work to get to the place where the city of Portland is actually directly purchasing for its use for its fleet biodiesel grown and processed by Oregon growers and producers that will be consumed directly by the city fleet. I have been told that no other RFP that people in this field have seen has actually included the cost of per pound canola seed as a criteria by which we were going to award the contract. And the cost was we're agreeing to pay actually no less than a certain amount per pound in order to assure our partners, who are the farmers east of the Cascades, that they can always count on the market and thus are incentivized to plant the crop and grow it. And this has been the stumbling block for a lot of entities that are traditionally used to going out on the market and getting the cheapest price. So it's a little different approach, but will create a market that we think hopefully will have the result of ultimately lowering the price for everybody, as this is produced on as biodiesel is produced on a mass scale by our regional farmers east of the Cascades. As I've often said, the best way to bridge the urban-rural divide is placarded with good old American greenbacks, and that's what this does. Our farmer partners in eastern Oregon are absolutely thrilled